From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. The holidays can be a difficult time, especially for people who spend them alone. A few weeks ago, we talked about the emotional experience of loneliness. Well, today, we're looking at the health effects of sustained loneliness with Kirsten Emerson. She's a clinical assistant professor of gerontology at UGA's College of Public Health, and she's joining us via Skype. Kirsten, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So loneliness and being alone, not the same thing. Can you clear up the distinction for us?
That's a really good way to start to talk about this topic, because you can be alone and not be lonely. You can also be with lots of people and still feel lonely. So loneliness is very much the subjective feeling of your needs being met. Some of us have a high need for social interaction and some of us don't. And so it's very much about your own needs and if they're being met.
So by self-reporting, 1 in 3 or 1 in 2, depending on which research you look at, report feeling lonely in America. Some public health officials are calling loneliness an epidemic. So what are some measurable health effects?
That's a good question. So we never really thought about the fact that loneliness could be more than just a quality of life issue. But in the last few decades, we've really noticed that there are physical health outcomes. So loneliness has been linked to all sorts of things like disability rates, early entrance into nursing homes, going to see your doctor more often. But also recently, researchers found that it can actually kill you, where you are more likely to die early if you're lonely than those who aren't.
So what are some of the particular physiological effects?
So there's different ways to look at it. One is if you're social, you're more likely to have healthier behaviors, right? If you're hanging out with friends, maybe they'll invite you to go for a walk and you're going to go for longer exercise periods than if you do it by yourself. Or you may go to a lunch and dinner and have a healthier choice than maybe just pouring yourself a bowl of cereal at night because you don't want to be bothered to make a whole large dinner. So there's that. But there's also very genetic kind of biological relationships between loneliness and health outcomes. So we're kind of programmed to want to be social because that helps us survive. And when we're not doing that, even our immune system can be compromised. So you may actually just be more susceptible to colds and getting sicker, which then, of course, can lead you to stay home more often and then not be as socially engaged. So it can be kind of a vicious cycle.
I'm looking at long-term effects of loneliness compared to the effects of smoking 15 cigarettes per day or alcoholism in some cases. You, Kirsten, researched the elderly population. How does loneliness affect seniors in particular?
So for older adults, it's a particular issue because some of the life events that can sometimes be higher risk categories for loneliness are more likely to happen among older adults. So one of them is retirement. Maybe your social engagement was being met by going to work every day, but now you're retired and you may not have an outlet for your social interaction outside of work. Or stopping to drive for older adults can be a major one. If you can't drive yourself anymore, in many places in America where you live, you might not be able to get out and do the things that you used to do, like going to clubs or going to church. If you can't drive, you may just physically become socially isolated, even if you'd really like to be out and about. Another one for older adults that's common is physical or mental health issues. So if you have some physical health problems that prevent you from going out, or if you're on more medications that make you dizzy and maybe a little more weary about going out, then you might start to isolate yourself, and then your needs are not being met as much.
But this is not by any means the only population. In fact, according to a report this fall out from Cigna, Generation Z is the loneliest generation. So these are people born in the mid-1990s to early 2000. What in particular is making them feel so lonely?
Yes, it's interesting because one of the interesting things about loneliness is it just doesn't discriminate. It can happen to anyone at any age. And in part, you know, we often like to blame social media, but I do think there's a relationship there that we sometimes think social media can replace social contacts, but it really can't. It can help. So, you know, I look at older adults, but for other people as well, especially if they're homebound, being able to connect with people via, you know, Skype like we're doing today, or looking at Facebook and connecting with old friends can be really great, but can also be really negative for you. So what if you, especially this time of year, log into your Facebook account or whatever social media is cooler than that now? You see people having fun and being with friends and family, and you don't have that. That can actually make you start to become or to feel like maybe your needs aren't being met because your expectations are going to go up seeing how other people are engaging. And so I think that can happen for any age group.
Well, so you pointed out in your research that loneliness and social isolation are often overlooked. So who is it that isn't paying attention? Is it the public? Is it medical professionals? Is it friends and family?
Yeah, I think it's actually all of them. So what's interesting is, and you just mentioned this earlier, right? It's connected. It's worse for your health than smoking or obesity. It's actually twice as harmful as obesity, but we don't have any public health campaigns for loneliness. We have a lot for obesity and smoking. And obviously those are incredibly important. And I'm not saying we shouldn't have those, but when was the last time you saw a billboard that talks about loneliness or having a small community outreach about loneliness? That isn't really happening. And in part, it's because we think of it as an isolated problem, but it's really a national crisis, I would say. If one out of three, or some research even more than that, are experiencing loneliness, then this is actually a big deal, especially because it can have these physical health consequences and it can even kill you early. And in some of our research, we found that older adults are seeing their doctor more often. And it's interesting because that's when people started to pay attention to our research, is when they realized that there's some economic cost to it.
Yeah.
Because it's really expensive to see a doctor.
Well, let's dig into that a little. You studied hospitalization and physician visits. And one of your studies in the American Journal of Public Health kind of pulled that apart. Can you tell us a little bit more about this study on healthcare utilization by people who are feeling lonely? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the study came about because I would talk to physicians who were not geriatricians, so they did not specialize in aging, but they would tell me that they saw older adults all the time in their practice and how frustrated they would be because they didn't actually think there was much wrong with many of them. They were coming in to talk. And so being the nerdy researcher that I am, we decided to look at it with data, and the data really supports this. And we found that older adults controlling for all sorts of health conditions were more likely to see a doctor if they were lonely, and they were more likely to see their primary care physician. And in a lot of ways, that makes sense, because a lot of times you know your primary care physician, you know the office staff at the front. It becomes a place where you can socialize. We didn't find that relationship with emergency room visits, which, again, also kind of makes sense. An ER is not a place where you usually know the people working. It's often also not a particularly pleasant place to be, and you don't really get a lot of socialization. Whereas in your primary care physician's office, you may get quite a bit of it. You talk to the front office staff, you talk to your doctor. It becomes more of a social event.
Nearly half of Americans report feeling lonely. That's according to a Cigna study, and some experts have called loneliness an epidemic. Kirsten Emerson studies loneliness as a public health issue. She's at UGA, and she's a clinical assistant professor of gerontology in the College of Public Health. I want to pick up on that because we heard a piece last week on NPR that Greeley, Colorado, this is a fire department small town, has a dedicated new specialized squad to respond to 911 calls. This is for non-emergencies. And the crew includes mental health professionals. Here's Jamie Clapp, a therapist in Colorado, evaluating a call.
I'm assessing his loneliness and if he's had contacts, because that can lead to a lot of physical problems. And we want to get him help and care, but we also care about him. And we want to make sure that he doesn't lose contact with somebody.
So she was talking there about a repeat 911 caller. How does this illuminate the need for resources? And do you know of any other community resources for people who are lonely and who need assistance?
Yes, this is one of those times where people, again, start to pay attention, because we're not using our tools effectively. And often it can be really expensive to use things like 911 for non-emergency calls. And neighborhoods and communities have actually been grappling with this problem for decades. And many small communities and even some larger ones have really great programs like this in place, where repeat callers get put on call lists or even visit lists by volunteers, which can be really great. And I think communities are already doing a really good job of at least trying to work with this population. What I think we're not so great about yet is doing almost a national level policy intervention. And other countries have done this. So for instance, the UK has this really wonderful program called the Silver Line, which has, among many things, a 1-800 or whatever the UK equivalent is, a toll-free number where older adults can call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that can, you know, reroute those 911 calls, which is not an effective use of our resources, into a place where there are trained volunteers that talk to them. They can be social calls. They can also do referrals if they need to, you know, maybe have some mental health counseling or some other things. But in many ways, it's just a place to call. And they've actually found in the UK that most of their calls are in the evenings or at nighttime when all the other places are closed. So there's clearly a huge need for it, which we don't yet have in the United States, though I do think communities like this one are doing a really good job trying to, with their limited resources, trying to come up with programs like that.
That's when people call. Sometimes loneliness has an isolating effect. We spoke this month with the host of the Lonely Hour podcast about the shame and stigma of loneliness, even though, you know, so many feel lonely. So what are some of the signs that somebody might be feeling loneliness?
Well, someone especially who used to have a really active life who may no longer be as active socially, that's something to look out for. So I mentioned driving earlier is a really big one for older adults. Maybe they were super active and they would drive themselves to places, but now for whatever reason, they can't drive anymore. That's a really big warning sign if you see that happening, to make sure that they still get maybe some in-home socialization. So maybe some phone calls could be warranted. And, you know, we often think about our own grandparents, and that's a pretty good place to start. But in our own neighborhoods, there's often people that we think, you know, that person probably doesn't have a lot of people to talk to. So just knowing that homebound is a pretty good risk factor, but also thinking about some of the life changes that may contribute to people not being as social as they used to be. And the reason I say that is because, as we talked about at the beginning, it's so subjective. I don't know if you're lonely just from looking at you. I can't draw your blood, which I know is part of what's frustrating to physicians. They don't know if someone's lonely. But if you know some of the risk factors, like a change in their social activity, you can at least be on the alert that they may be feeling lonely.
There's a lot of research indicating that the holidays can be an especially difficult time emotionally. There's a lot of stress, often unrealistic expectations of togetherness and perfection. But there is this myth that suicides go up around the December holidays. Data does not back that up. Suicides actually decrease at this time of year. What do you think it is that perpetuates this idea?
Yes. And so part of the word that you used that was important here is expectations, right? And this is part of loneliness too. If your expectations are really high and are not being met, then you're lonely. But I think what we're actually much more concerned about is this chronic or persistent loneliness, being lonely every now and then, or just being bummed when you see other people having more of a social life than you are, especially around the holidays. That's a normal range of human emotion. That's okay if you feel it for a couple of days, even maybe for a week or two around special holidays. But that's not usually where the physical and mental health outcomes are. It's usually the people who are chronically and persistently lonely or persistently have depression. So the range of human emotions, totally normal if it's just up and down for a couple of days. But if it's persistent for sometimes years and years, that's really when we start seeing these health outcomes.
So if somebody is listening to this interview and feels either is going to be alone or just feels alone over the holidays, having trouble coping with the stress, what is your advice?
That's a good question, right? It's so difficult because of the word that you mentioned earlier, stigma. A lot of people don't want to admit to being lonely. And so kind of as trite as it sounds, it's really important to just admit that you need some more interaction. So reaching out. There are many programs that are wonderful in many communities that you can reach out to. There's, you know, especially for older adults, area agencies on aging, but there's lots of things that are happening. But it is kind of the pressure is on the person to reach out themselves, because many times others won't know that you're lonely because you can't see it. And so they may not know to reach out to them. And so my first, you know, piece of advice is always to just admit to it. You know that you're not the only one. You're not lonely in your loneliness, per se. You're not the only one. So admit it and just reach out to people. And it's okay to do. Most people will understand it. We've all been there at some point or another. And if the research is accurate, most people around you are also feeling lonely, so they may actually appreciate you reaching out.
Kirsten Emerson, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Kirsten Emerson is Clinical Assistant Professor of Gerontology in UGA's College of Public Health. Now, just ahead, the GPB Newsroom has had a really full year. We're going to be hearing from some reporters and hosts about the stories and projects that really stuck with them from 2018. That's when On Second Thought continues after a short break.